This is your WWE Survivor Series 2019 review from Chicago, Illinois. Overall, what I thought was a very good show, one of the better WWE pay-per-views on the whole, all year long, save for that main event. What the hell was that main event? It's too bad, really, because it was cool to see Shayna Baszler get to headline Survivor Series for the first time. But if that was what they had planned for the main event, then whoever came up with the match order for this show, you done fucked up. But before I get into any of that, I have to address something first. Mauro Ranallo was apparently supposed to be on this show tonight. I believe Triple H even may have made mention of that fact at some point. It might have been on the post-takeover, conference call type thing that he does. So Mauro was supposed to call some of the matches tonight. I would imagine the NXT Championship match, would have been one of them. And as you noticed, he was not there. He also deleted, or at least deactivated, his Twitter account after last night's War Games show. It is no coincidence that during that show, and I was not aware of this until after it was already over, Corey Graves tweeted this. This was during TakeOver last night. Corey Graves obviously was watching, and he tweeted this. He said, "Just for the record, guys, I know you wouldn't know it, but there's actually a WWE Hall of Famer and a former Ring of Honor champion on commentary. I'd imagine they have a lot to offer." Now, he is referring to Beth Phoenix, who is a WWE Hall of Famer, and Nigel McGuinness, who is a former Ring of Honor world champion. And he is clearly suggesting that Mauro talks too much and does not let his partners at the booth speak or get a word in edgewise, which, yeah, Mauro is very talkative. I've not noticed Nigel not being able to speak. And frankly, probably the less that Beth speaks, it's not as though she's spitting out facts and history and stuff. That's Mauro's job. But in any event, that doesn't even matter. Okay, that's basically what he was saying. Now, during the pay-per-view, Michael Cole, they had an on-camera, and he claimed that Mauro wasn't there because he lost his voice. He was shouting so much that he lost his voice, and therefore he was not there, and you would see him back on Wednesday. Nothing to see here. Yes, because when I lose my voice, I always delete my Twitter. Even if you believe what Corey said to be true, or if you don't like Mauro Ranallo's commentary, that's fine. It takes a special kind of asshole to tweet something like that when you work in the same company. And you know that the guy has struggles with bipolar and mental health issues, which he's been very vocal about, but that's almost secondary. This is your colleague. This is a fellow announcer who works for the same pay-per-view, the same company. Now, if you think the man isn't doing his job well, send him a DM. Pull him aside. Send him a DM and take it up with him in private. Frank Shamrock, I saw him chime in on Twitter. He's good friends with Mauro Ranallo. He tweeted to Corey Graves. He clearly wants to punch the guy in the mouth. I don't think there's any need for that. There's no need for violence here. If you are a colleague of his and you are aware of these of the issues that he has gone through before, that he goes through every single day, how are you not more sensitive to that? He could have addressed it with him privately if it was bothering him that much. I don't think it was something being done to build up competition for Survivor Series between the announcers, because when in the weeks of build to Survivor Series has there been any sort of competition even hinted at between the announcers? None. None at all. So I don't think it has anything to do with that. He didn't go after Nigel. He didn't go after Beth Phoenix. He was just being an asshole. When you know the man has struggles with these problems every day, to put him on blast like that when you work in the same company, Corey Graves is a dick. And I fully expect Mauro to come back and to say exactly what Michael Cole said. Oh, I lost my voice. Because he's a team player. But I just wanted to get that off my chest. The poll is open. If you would like to vote, at Solomonser on Twitter, give Survivor Series a thumbs up, or give Survivor Series a thumbs down. You may do so, and the poll will be open for a few days. And Super Chats also are open. There's a whole bunch that have already come in. Casey is Raw, thank you very much. Ryan W., appreciate it. Mr. E1976, $5 Super Chat. Drew Every Day, Russell Graham just subbed to the channel. A lot of activity going on. I'll be thanking people throughout the night. And we're going to get started here with this review in just a moment. But first, tonight's review is sponsored by The Ridge. The Ridge is the slim wallet. Fits comfortably into your pocket. They're the perfect holiday season gift for your dad, your brother, maybe your boyfriend or husband, if we have any ladies listening. Or maybe this guy here. Take a look at your screen right now. You see this guy right there on your left? You see that? You know who that is? That's CubeBot. Now, some of you who have listened to me for years and have followed me on Twitter, you are very familiar with CubeBot. And in fact, you might remember this photo. There was a horrendous episode of Monday Night Raw many years ago. I mean, now it's commonplace every fucking week. But there was a particularly boring episode of Raw many years ago. This might be going back to 2013 or 2014. And so I decided to take it upon myself to take pictures of CubeBot. CubeBot couldn't take it anymore, so he busted out the Jack Daniels, as you can see. CubeBot's a lightweight. Take a look at the picture on your right. Look at this guy. Look at this guy. What a sad sack he is. Doesn't he know you don't mix whiskey and vodka? This is what he looked like by the end of the night. Now I want you to take a look at this. This is what CubeBot looks like today. You know why? You know what he's holding there? That's a Ridge wallet. They come in aluminum, burnt titanium, carbon fiber, and now they have their new Damascus steel wallet. You can pick a cash strap, money clip, whatever you prefer. Keep your cash safe and secure. Get a lifetime warranty. Every wallet is guaranteed for life. And right now, you can get, look at CubeBot, he's so happy. You can get 10% off your first Ridge wallet with free shipping all over the world. These wallets are going to make a great stocking stuffer for the holidays, so get on it. Be as happy as CubeBot is. Look at that smile. Look at him. He's got his leg all propped up. This guy's back on the wagon. He's been sober now. He's got his wallet. He's not spending it on beer. It's great. Go to ridge.com/Solomonster. Use the promo code Solomonster at checkout. God, you got to love this guy. It's been years since people have seen CubeBot. Anyway, go to ridge.com/Solomonster. And that's the code, Solomonster, at checkout, 10% off, courtesy of the Solomonster Sounds Off. All right, let's get down to business here. Kickoff show opened with a tag team battle royal, with the winners getting a tag team World Cup trophy. Does anybody actually think this stuff means anything? You know, we go to Saudi Arabia, and we have Gallows and Anderson. They win some kind of, what was it, a battle royal or a gauntlet? I don't even remember at this point. To crown the best tag team in the world. So now the OC comes out every week, and what does the announcer say? The best tag team in the world. Do you look at Anderson and Gallows and think this is the best tag team in the world? Have they been any more dominant since then? Fucking Carl Anderson got pinned the other night on Raw by Humberto Carrillo, who couldn't steal a win for weeks over AJ Styles. So now they have a trophy. Yeah, because those mean a whole lot, like the Andre Battle Royal trophy. Oh, yeah. So this was a way to get everybody on the show. Representing Raw, we had the OC, Street Profits, Zack Ryder, Kurt Hawkins. Repping SmackDown, we had the Lucha House Party, Heavy Machinery, The Revival, and Bobby Roode and Dolph Ziggler. And we had teams from NXT, including the Forgotten Sons, Breezango, and Fabian Aichner and Marcel Bartel of Imperium from NXT UK. Steve Cutler dumped out first. The Forgotten Sons are quickly and quite appropriately forgotten here in this Battle Royal. Lucha House Party out next. Zack Ryder dumped by Bartel. Rude takes Aichner out of the ring. Revival and OC, they work together. Bye-bye Otis. Revival knocks out Breezango, eliminating NXT from the Battle Royal. That's it. Those are all the NXT teams. Gone. Gone. Steven Feast, thank you for the $5 Super Chat, brother. Appreciate it. They are open. Don't forget, $10 or more, you get Russo on a pole. Everybody loves Russo on a pole. So the final three teams, we've got Street Profits, OC, and Rude and Ziggler. They are the final three. Ziggler hits a super kick to Gallows, knocks him out of the ring. So much for best in the world. Hits an accidental super kick to his partner. He hit Rude with a super kick, but Rude went through the middle rope. Montez Ford hit this incredible twisting, it was a frog splash. I was going to say moonsault. Twisting frog splash to Dolph Ziggler. This was a thing of beauty. Ah, there he is. There's Russo on a pole. I love seeing this during the stream at least once. It's not a real stream without Russo on a pole. Thank you, Sean. And Brumakian. Brumakian Productions has one coming in as well. So we have the twisting frog splash by Montez Ford. I will always sing the praises of Montez Ford with these frog splashes. He gets more height than anybody I think I've ever seen. It's incredible. But then as soon as he gets up, Rude sneaks up from behind and dumps him out. So Dolph Ziggler and Bobby Rude win the Battle Royal. They win the trophy. I guess they are the... What would they be? What would you call them? We already have a best in the world. What's better than that? What's better than the best? I don't know. But they won the Battle Royal. And you know what? It's nice to see them actually counting pre-show wins this year, which they have not done before. And so that was the first win for SmackDown. Lio Rush, Akira Tozawa, and Kalisto for the Cruiserweight title. This was good. Felt a little Lio Rushed. Some bad humor there. Clearly this was an afterthought, considering how late this was added. Nobody really seemed to care. Tozawa hit Rush with the senton off the top. Kalisto breaks up the pin. Salida del Sol to Tozawa. Lio Rush comes off the top rope onto Kalisto with the frog splash for the win. So keep this in mind, because I'm going to bring this up more as the night goes on here. This was the second frog splash of the night. Okay, the second frog splash in as many matches, and we're only on the kickoff show. Okay, this would not be the last time tonight that we would see a frog splash. So he hits the frog splash, gets the win. This was nothing like that Cruiserweight title match that we saw at Full Sail a few weeks ago with Rush and Angel Garza. But it was good. Yeah, for what it was good. And it was the first win of the night for NXT. So NXT and SmackDown at this point were all knotted up at one win apiece. Viking Raiders, New Day, Kyle O'Reilly and Bobby Fish of the Undisputed Era, Battle of the Tag Team Champions. This was bumped off the main card late in the day to the kickoff show. I know that upset a lot of people, given the choices they had. I mean, look, looking back on it now, they should have put that freaking women's triple threat on the kickoff show if that's what they had planned. But when you really look at the card from top to bottom, what other match would you have bumped if not this one? I mean, there's no easy answer. This was kind of the match that had to go if they just felt they didn't have enough time on the main card. I thought this was a very good match. Very pro-NXT crowd here in Chicago. I don't know if that was because of that excellent takeover show the night before in the same building, or if NXT is just catching on. I mean, it's not really reflected in the ratings necessarily, but NXT definitely was the favorite of the fans in Chicago tonight. I love the big man spots early with Big E and Ivar. There was a Doomsday double stomp, and this was kind of weird seeing Kofi Kingston considering the year that he's had. You know, that great story they told with him heading into WrestleMania and WWE champion. All those months for Kofi Kingston as WWE champion. And here he is on the pre-show, right back to where he was before. Wrestling tag team matches on the kickoff show. Just weird to see. So they hit a Doomsday double stomp. Ivar breaks up the count. Undisputed Era break up the Midnight Hour. Kofi misses Trouble in Paradise, and he gets laid out outside the ring. Undisputed Era is left standing with the Viking Raiders. So they go at it for a while. In the end, Viking Raiders hit the Viking Experience. And Monday Night Raw gets on the board. We are all tied up. One win for each brand as the pay-per-view opens with the traditional Survivor Series elimination women's match. Team Raw with Charlotte Flair, Natalya, Sarah Logan, and the Kabuki Warriors against Team SmackDown, Sasha Banks, Nikki Cross, Lacey Evans, Carmella, Dana Brooke, against Team NXT. Rhea Ripley, Candice LeRae, Io Shirai, Bianca Belair, and Toni Storm. And each team, and this was the same for all of the Survivor Series elimination matches on the show, all of the teams came out to their respective brand's theme song. So nobody had individual entrances. Nobody in any of these matches came out to their own theme music. They came out to the Raw theme, or the SmackDown theme, or the NXT theme. At least the NXT theme is pretty cool. So, they didn't mind that so much. Shout out to Wave for the $4.99 Super Chat. Red Panda. Red Panda with the Super Chat as well. All the way from the UK. Good to hear from you. So, we had Kairi Sane and Io Shirai sharing the ring together for the first time. I believe the first time since coming to WWE. Of course, we saw them working together once against Pentagon in Lucha Underground. That was feels like a lifetime ago now. As I'm seeing Corbin Krang on my screen. I love these little pop-ups here. So we got to see Kairi and Io go one-on-one. It didn't last nearly as long as I had hoped, but for the time it lasted, all of maybe 2 minutes, not even, it was great. Dana Brooke, the entire time as these two were going at it, standing off in the corner. She was watching. She was admiring. That's exactly where she should have been. That's exactly where she belonged. In the corner. Back away. Do not interfere. Just watch. Just observe. Like the rest of us. So something happened in here, and I didn't see, storyline-wise, exactly what caused it. All of a sudden, Io Shirai and Candice LeRae are down outside the ring. I don't know what caused it. I don't know what set that up. They're just down, and they're playing it off like they're legitimately injured. Referees are coming over. They're throwing up the X. They're swarming around these women, and you're thinking the worst. You're thinking, oh my God, what's happened here? This match has come to a screeching halt. And as we would find out later on, they were not really hurt, but they took them out of the match. So Candice was gone, and even worse, Io was gone. Io was going to be one of the best parts of this whole match, and she was gone. So Team NXT, all of a sudden, was down to three members. Not a good 2 nights for Rhea Ripley's teams when it comes to the odds, given what happened last night. Came down to 4-on-2, but they found a way to win. So the story is, so is she going to be able to find a way to win again tonight? We had Bianca pinning Nikki Cross with Ripley holding her legs from the outside. Bianca Belair, 450 off the top, eliminates Sarah Logan. Natural selection by Charlotte Flair takes out Carmella. Insane elbow from Kairi Sane down onto Toni Storm. But Sasha Banks hits the Meteora off the ropes to Kairi and pins her to eliminate her. That brings in Asuka. Asuka with a spin kick. Goodbye, Dana Brooke. Asuka then gets into it with Charlotte, her partner. They're shoving back and forth. We already have dissension here in the ranks of Team Raw. So Asuka mists Charlotte in the face. And then she walks out, never to be seen again. Charlotte can't see. Lacey Evans hits her with the woman's right and pins her. Natty then pins Lacey. If you watch Natty's lips, she mutters, bye, bitch, to her after pinning her. That's not very nice. But all of a sudden, NXT, which was at a disadvantage earlier, now has more women left than either Raw or SmackDown. So there was a cool double sharpshooter bank statement spot to Toni Storm. So Toni Storm was gone. Sasha and Natty, now they're going to team up for an old school heart attack to Bianca Belair. That eliminates Bianca. So that leaves Rhea Ripley all by herself. Except Sasha says, fuck you, Natty, nails her, and pins her. And that leaves us with Sasha Banks and Rhea Ripley, which sounds awesome. This was actually, I thought this was a really cool way to end this match. Meteora off the top, Ripley kicks out. Bank statement to Ripley. All of a sudden, we see Candice and Io. They run back down from the back. They pull Rhea out of the ring. Springboard drop kick off the ropes to Sasha by Io. And Rhea Ripley sets up Sasha for the Riptide. NXT goes up on Raw and SmackDown with 2 wins so far. I thought that there were a lot of very awkward moments here in this match. But by the end, when it was over and I look back on it, even though I wasn't thrilled with some parts of it, I thought it ended up being a very good match. Now, my question is, did Asuka get counted out? Because if not, should she not be able to get back into the match? Or were Candice and Io also not allowed in? They just kind of showed up. I don't know if they acknowledged that they were not allowed back into the match. They never really had a chance to come back in. I would assume they were eliminated. So this was a little bit of a cluster. I was not a fan of Io Shirai missing the majority of this match. It's like they teased you at the beginning with her and Kairi, and then all of a sudden it was like, boom, Io's gone. I'm like, where'd Io go? So I didn't like that part. I was pleasantly surprised that NXT got the win. And to see them go all in so hard this weekend on Rhea Ripley between her win last night at War Games and here again tonight, she's a rock star. Look, she would fit right in today. If the main roster, Vince McMahon said, you know, God damn it, I want her on the main roster, she'd fit right in. Let us hope they do not get their hands on her just yet. I know Vince loves his blondes. Boy, does he love his blondes. But I don't think I'm ready for that. I don't trust what they would do with her just yet. But this weekend was great for her career. So there was a backstage meeting. Seth Rollins, Kevin Owens. And Rollins wants to know, hey, you know, after last night, what's the deal, man? You know, you popped up as a surprise on Team NXT. What's going on here? And Owens says, NXT doesn't need me. NXT doesn't need Kevin Owens. But Monday Night Raw desperately needs Kevin Owens. And you know what? That is a 100% shoot comment. He is absolutely correct. I said as much in my review. It's like, I feel like I got deja vu. Did I not say that I was hoping Kevin Owens is not back full-time on NXT because Raw would be that much worse? They need a big baby face on that roster. Did you hear this crowd's reaction tonight to Seth Rollins? You would think that this guy murdered 15 people and was wanted. You're going to tell me that Seth Rollins is going to be the top babyface on Monday Night Raw? Are you out of your fucking mind? So he's 100% correct. Monday Night Raw needs Kevin Owens a hell of a lot more than NXT does. And anyway. And I know that tonight was maybe a little worse for Seth because of where they were. They were in Chicago. But anyway, what he was saying here in reality was 100% true. So I'm just checking out some of the super chats. I go Crimson Alpha. What's going on, Crimson? Crimson Alpha, Jonathan Bordeaux. Not very happy with Corey Graves. Yeah, I don't think any of us are. Then we had AJ Styles representing Monday Night Raw against Shinsuke Nakamura representing SmackDown against Roderick Strong representing NXT. Triple threat match. Battle of the Brands. Not quite the classic I was hoping for, but I probably had unrealistic expectations going into this. This was still very good. We had Styles. At one point, had Roddy on his shoulders. Nakamura came off the top rope with a Kinshasa or just a diving knee. It was pretty cool, whatever it was. We had a showdown, a stare down showdown at one point in the middle between AJ and Nakamura. Cole mentioned their history dating all the way back to Japan. And I was thinking about their feud in WWE last year. Was it last year or the year before? God, time passes so quickly. But when we had Styles and Nakamura, they had their WrestleMania match. They ended up having a whole bunch of matches that year. And the matches actually got progressively better as the months went on. But looking back on it now, they still have not had a match as good with each other as the one that they had that one year at Wrestle Kingdom. And I don't know that they ever will. They're a lot older now. WWE is a very different style than New Japan. But they were going at it. Nakamura, he kind of booted his way out of a Styles clash. AJ hit the phenomenal forearm. Roddy sneaks in. He tosses AJ out to the floor. Covers Nakamura, steals the pin. And so yet another win for NXT. I did not expect Strong to win. I had AJ pegged to win. AJ's defending his U.S. title on Raw tomorrow night against Carrillo. I figure, well, you know, you give AJ a win and gives him some momentum going into a title defense on TV tomorrow night. But no. No. Not at all. I guess you could also argue that Nakamura should have won. He's got that brand new Intercontinental title. I talked about that on the podcast when I did the Survivor Series predictions. Gave my thoughts on that. I like the design. I actually like the way it looks. But they changed the one title in the entire company that did not need to be changed. That's the funny part. They have a lot of titles you could look at and go, God, that thing is ugly. The Intercontinental title was not one of them. And that's the title they decided to change. But we could have ended up with something far worse, so I just wish it had a little bit of blue on it, but that's my only critique. Then we had what turned out to be, and I'm looking back on the whole card now, and I probably would still stick to this as my opinion on what I thought was the match of the night, Adam Cole and Pete Dunne for the NXT Championship. This was the, I would say it's between this and the men's Survivor Series elimination match, which I also thought was excellent, but this was the, certainly up to this point, easily the best thing on this show. It had very little heat early on. The crowd was not really all that loud for this match, the first, I'd say the first half, quite frankly. Very little heat early on, but they won them over as it went on, and the crowd got way up for those final few minutes where it felt special. Because you could say, well, who cares what the crowd thinks? You know, the crowd doesn't affect whether or not the match is good or not. Actually, they do. They do. And whether people realize it or not, it does affect your perception of whether or not the match is, you know, a special match that you're going to look back on and say, well, shit, that was a really fun match. Or like the main event tonight, I think people are going to look back and go, man, people were sitting on their hands, they were bored, they were chanting CM Punk. So believe me, the crowd makes a difference. They won these people over here in Chicago. Cole was selling the ribs after that ridiculous bump off the top of the cage in War Games last night. Dunn was selling the knee a little bit later on, so it was almost like the walking wounded here in this match. Late in the match, they navigate out onto the apron. Adam Cole hits a Panama Sunrise on the ring apron. Crazy. So Dunn somehow beats the count back into the ring. He eats a super kick, two count only. Dunn grabs Adam Cole's fingers. He snaps the fingers. He goes for the bitter end. Adam Cole counters it into another destroyer, follows it up with the last shot to the back of the head, and picks up the win. And so Adam Cole, not surprisingly, retains the NXT Championship in what I thought was an excellent match. I don't think you can ignore the fact, if I had one, I don't even know if you would call it a critique, but one thing about it is Adam Cole was damn near murdered last night at the end of that War Games match. And so he comes out tonight for a championship match. Pete Dunne was also, you know, he had a match the night before as well. It's not like he had the night off. But he lost to a guy who got, you know, an air raid crash from 12 feet up off the top of a cage through two tables. He lost fair and square. Adam Cole didn't cheat. Undisputed Era didn't run down. He lost. He lost to a man who by all rights should be laid up in a hospital bed somewhere. But I think the match was so good, people aren't going to look back and go, well, what a loser. What a loser Pete Dunne is. Because the match turned out to be that good. I don't think most people are really going to think about that. Only schmucks like me. Schmucks like me will bring that up. But I love this match. And a few weeks ago on the podcast, I said, in my opinion, Will Ospreay was easily the wrestler of the year for 2019. But I mentioned Adam Cole. You know, he's in the conversation. I would say Cole's probably right behind him. Maybe he's number two. But in my book, Will Ospreay has had a better overall year in terms of, you know, just the quality of his matches, the different opponents he's worked with, big opponents, small opponents, just match after match after match. This guy is just having an insane 2019. Adam Cole is making a late run here in the year at that crown. Holy shit. What a November this man is having. A November to remember for Adam Cole. He started the month, literally the first day of the month. An impromptu match on SmackDown. He pins Daniel Bryan in the main event of SmackDown on Fox. Very first appearance on the show. Beats Daniel Bryan. Then he wrestles Seth Rollins on Raw the following Monday. Then he had that performance last night in the War Games match. And then here, his Survivor Series debut, the night after, defending his championship. Excellent match, beats Pete Dunne. Another great performance. Outside of Rhea Ripley, I will give you that. Outside maybe of Rhea. Name me who has had a better November, a better month of November than Adam Cole. And we had Daniel Bryan against The Fiend, Bray Wyatt, for the Universal Blueberry Belt. Unfortunately, they kept that fucking red light. So we had, it looked like we were in a what do they call it, the film developing room. One of those rooms you go into to develop film and photos. That's basically what the arena turns into for these matches. Immediately, bell rings. Brian hits a running drop kick in the corner. Bray, though, catches him, takes his head off. Just a wicked lariat. And the Fiend is dominating Uranage, and he's, you know, hitting Brian in the throat. Brian got a little bit of an opening, and he's, you know, taking it to Wyatt. He's throwing him into the steps. He does a giant dive off the ropes out to the floor on top of the Fiend. He's trying. Everything he's trying, though, Fiend keeps getting up. Hits the running knee, two count only. Goes for the mandible claw. Brian manages. Now, they were on the ropes. Brian was sitting on the top rope. Fiend goes, gets the mandible claw. Brian falls backwards. He turns it into an armbar. A draping armbar. Has to let go at the count of five. So Brian comes off the top rope, and he gets a right hand right to the ribs. Sister Abigail, he counters into a roll-up, two count only. Brian goes, I forgot what he was going for. He went for something, and he got caught with the mandible claw. And Bray put him down. Brian goes out. Referee counts three, and the Fiend retains the WWE Universal Blueberry Belt here at Survivor Series. The outcome was never in doubt. There was no way the Fiend was going to lose his championship so quickly. And I suspect that this will not be the only match these two have. But I thought this was the best match that we have seen the Fiend in since he started with the whole character, the whole gimmick. Admittedly, he's only had about four matches. It's a very small sample size. The match with Finn Balor at SummerSlam was so quick, you know, you can't even grade it. Because it had to be. He had to be dominant. Finn was leaving, so it was kind of like one and done. Wham, bam, thank you, ma'am, adios, and that was it. His first real match would have been Hell in a Cell against Seth Rollins. One of the biggest debacles of the year. One of the worst pay-per-view finishes in the history of the company. I won't say the worst, but if you made a list of the top 10, top 20, it's probably on there. So then they had a match in Saudi Arabia, him and Rollins, which was at least better than whatever they did at Hell in a Cell. Not much. It was all gimmicks and, you know, false count anywhere and explosions and sparks and shit. This was the best match, I think, that the Fiend has had so far. Just a quick check of the Super Chats here. Ryan W., thank you very much. Says, NXT trying to casually become WWE through osmosis. Not really sure what that means. Sounds bad, though. I hope not. Will Robb, thank you, $5 Super Chat. Says, my humble apologies on my comment yesterday about you uploading but not going live. That's no problem, my friend. All's good. All is good. We have a lot of people subbing to the channel as well, which is always great, so you get the notifications when I do go live. You'll get a spiffy little email that lets you know. And we had the Men's Survivor Series elimination match, Team Raw, with Seth Rollins and Kevin Owens, Ricochet, Drew McIntyre, and Randy Orton against Team SmackDown with Roman Reigns, Braun Strowman, King Corbin, Chad Gable, and Mustafa Ali against Team NXT, consisting of Tommaso Ciampa, Matt Riddle, Keith Lee, Damian Priest, and Walter, the NXT United Kingdom Champion. This was a great match where not only did NXT have a chance to shine, but they made a new star in Keith Lee. And I don't know if they've got bigger plans in store for Keith Lee. I don't know if Keith Lee is on his way to the main roster after what we saw from him tonight. If we'll only see him in NXT for a few more months, maybe he'll pop up in the Royal Rumble. I don't know. I don't know what their plans are for him. I would say you almost have to. You know, because now it almost felt like big fish, small pond type situation with him in NXT. I mean, NXT is on USA and they need their own stars. I get that. But you know that at some point they're going to look at this guy. They're going to look at the reaction he got. They're going to look at how fucking big he is and the things that he can do for a guy his size. I mean, I don't know if it was Cole or who it was on commentary, maybe Nigel, who made the comment that he does things as a man his size that a man his size should not be able to do. And at some point, you've got to think that Vince McMahon is going to look at this guy and go, we can work with this. We can do something with this. I don't know if that's good or bad, but this was the best night of his career. Match went about half an hour. Seth Rollins, the tweet slayer, was about as popular as you would expect him to be here in Chicago, which is to say not very popular at all. Everything he did, he got booed. Maybe he'll tweet about it. If he does, let me know. Walter, as far as I talk about a complete 180, from Seth Rollins, we go to Walter. In front of this crowd, which was a very pro-NXT crowd, Walter was the most over guy in the entire match. I thought they were chanting Goldberg early on, because Matt Riddle was out there. I'm like, are they chanting Goldberg? It sounds like Goldberg. And then I listened a little closer. I don't think they were chanting Goldberg. I think they were chanting Walter. So you hear all the Walter chants. So here's Walter, right? The United Kingdom champion. I believe he's undefeated, yet to be pinned, yet to be made to submit. And so naturally, he was eliminated first. Of course he was. Of course he was. Claymore kicked by... Now, he got a little bit of offense. He was in there with Braun throwing chops. It's not like he just got kicked in the head and pinned. But I would say he didn't get more than about 2 minutes, if that, in the ring before he got Claymore kicked by Drew McIntyre. And it was goodbye, Walter. Lots of bullshit chants for that. People were not happy to see Walter eliminated first here in this match. We had a little bit of interplay here between Chad Gable and Matt Riddle, which was very cool. I'd love to see more of that. I like the spot where Kevin Owens is up on the top rope, and we've got two bodies down in the ring. We've got Tommaso Ciampa, and we've got Chad Gable. And Owens has his pick. He has his pick of who he is going to come off the top rope and hit a frog splash on, and he chooses Chad Gable. Which is to make you wonder, where does this guy's allegiance really lie? He spared the NXT guy. After teaming with him, they were tag team partners the night before. He went after the SmackDown guy instead. I assume, anyway, that's why they did that way. Well, he would pay for that a few minutes later. Ciampa caught him with a DDT coming back into the ring, and he eliminated Kevin Owens. Fans did not like that. And so, Owens was gone. RKO takes out Damian Priest. RKO attempt to Matt Riddle, but Riddle rolled up Orton for the shock pin. Matt Riddle pins Randy Orton. And then he was gloating, or brooding, or whatever word you want to use. As he's celebrating, Orton lays him out with an RKO anyway. Because fuck you, that's why. Maybe he pictured Tony Khan, I don't know. So he gives RKO to Matt Riddle. Corbin sneaks in, pins Riddle to eliminate him. McIntyre uses a Claymore kick on Braun Strowman. Outside the ring, Braun counted out because Braun Strowman is a loser. He is booked like a loser. Corbin pinned Ricochet after the end of days. Ricochet was, he was bouncing around in there like a rubber ball. He was selling for, Ricochet looked great. Ricochet was doing Ricochet things here in this match. He was bumping around like a madman, and so he gets put down by Baron Corbin. Seth Rollins pins Ali. So what happened here, they're outside the ring. Some of the guys are outside the ring. Rollins is inside. And Corbin takes issue with the fact that Ali tagged himself into the match. Now, they're tag team partners. So instead, he's like accosting this man. Why'd you tagged yourself in? And Ali's not going to take his shit, and so he shoves Corbin. But then as soon as Ali climbs inside the ring because of the distraction, he is immediately curb stomped by Seth Rollins and pinned. And the crowd did not like that. Now, I don't know if they were just that into Ali, or my guess is they just don't like Seth Rollins. So they booed. They booed the elimination of Mustafa Ali. Tommaso Ciampa, actually before Tommaso Ciampa, Roman Reigns. He pinned Drew McIntyre with a spear. Tommaso Ciampa, he pinned Baron Corbin after Roman Reigns speared Corbin. They were arguing. Corbin was just stirring shit. And so he got taken out. Seth Rollins pinned Tommaso Ciampa after a curb stomp. This was after he ate a spear from Roman Reigns. And so it came down to the final three. One man from Raw, one man from SmackDown, one man from NXT. Roman Reigns, Seth Rollins, and Keith Lee. So Rollins is just kicking the hell out of Lee. He gets him down. He goes up and he hits a frog splash, but Lee kicks out. Let me pause here. Remember what I said earlier on the kickoff show, right? Montez Ford, frog splash. Leo Rush, frog splash. Kevin Owens in this match, frog splash. Seth Rollins, frog splash. That's what, four? Okay, we're not done yet. Just remember that, okay? That's four. I could be missing one here, but that's four. So Rollins is coming after Lee. He catches him. Lee catches Seth Rollins. He hits his, I believe he calls it the ground zero. It's the fireman's carry power slam. Some people might call it the jackhammer. I guess it's the jackhammer, but I think it's called ground zero. And he eliminates Seth Rollins, and the people rejoice. The people rejoice. I can't wait to hear CM Punk analyze this on WWE Backstage. And by the way, thank you to the people in the chat. This is where the chat comes in handy. I had a couple of people mention to me, I forgot. That's right. Ali is from Chicago. So that probably is why, more than anything, he was booed. That's right. Ali is a hometown boy. So, of course, the crowd would not be very happy about him being eliminated. So thank you to Colbert in the chat for reminding me of that. So the Tweet Slayer is gone, and it comes down to Roman Reigns and Keith Lee. And Roman catches him with a couple of Superman punches, and he goes for the pin. And it sounded to me like he hit the three count. Now, I don't know if it was a botch. I don't know if Keith Lee took a little too much time to get his shoulder up. It almost made it better. It was that they really just portrayed it as this great dramatic near fall. Lee hits a gigantic spirit bomb. I mean, this thing, I can't even put into words how gigantic this was. He got Roman Reigns so high in the air. And when Reigns landed, he literally bounced. He bounced. He was completely bent over his shoulder to the point where his shoulders were coming up off the mat. He fucking bounced. Another close near fall. Another close near fall. Fans were hanging on to every fall at this point. This is awesome chance. Lee went for a moonsault off the second rope. He missed. Reigns speared him inside out and pinned him to win the match for Team SmackDown. And the two of them shared a fist bump of respect when the match was over. And it's interesting to watch this because Roman Reigns, if you'll notice, I mean, I'm not saying he wasn't booed maybe a little bit, but he didn't really get booed at the end of this match. Like, after the pin was already done, he was cheered. I'm sure people would have loved to see Keith Lee win, but it's not like Roman got booed out of the building. So I believe, his heat, for now, has officially transferred to Seth Rollins. It has migrated to the other end of the Shield. Until, of course, they start to push Roman more and more and more going into WrestleMania. And then, invariably, he will likely get booed again. But for now, it seems to have transferred to his former Shield brother. So at this point in the pay-per-view, we had NXT up with 3 wins, SmackDown with 2. And Raw was out of it. Raw only had 1 win. Then we had the WWE Championship match, Brock Lesnar defending the title against Rey Mysterio, no holds barred. Mysterio was out there dressed as the Joker with his mask. The bell rings, and immediately, doink Mysterio. He slides out of the ring. He grabs a lead pipe from underneath the ring, and he's going to use it as a weapon. Brock says, I don't think so. Brock ends up just killing this guy. He's throwing Rey around. He's just flinging him through the air onto the announce table and just destroying. He's murdering this man. Finally, Dominic runs down to the ring with a towel in his hand, like he was MJF. And Brock grabs the towel out of his hand. He throws it out of the ring. He's going to beat up Dominic. He's going to lay this kid out. Mysterio sneaks up from behind, and Brock is caught with a low blow. Dominic then gives Brock a second low blow. How many times have I come on here live or even recorded a review for a pay-per-view in the last, 5 years and talked about Brock Lesnar getting caught by a low blow? And you would think that by this point, even in kayfabe, is this guy dumb? Why does he not wear a cup? It's the only way people can get heat on him is to give him a low blow. Why does he not wear any support? It's like I would say this all the time when AJ was feuding with Nakamura, and every single week, Nakamura would find innovative new ways to give AJ Styles a low blow. And AJ would have this look on his face like, and he would collapse in a heap on the mat. And I'm like, I don't feel sorry for this fucking guy. Why should I? He should have learned his lesson by now. You go to Modell's, $10, you get a cup. So, of course, what do? You go for the balls. Like father, like son. So now Brock is down. They get him on the ropes. And they hit a double father-son 619. Ray tells Dominic, quick, go up top. So he tells Dominic to go up to the top rope. And Dominic, somebody in the chat said Dominic Dink. I called him Doink Mysterio because with the Joker thing, he kind of looked like Doink. I guess Dominic would be Dink. So we had Doink and Dink. Dink goes up to the top rope. And what does he hit? He hits a frog splash. And a very good one, too, I must say. Follows that up with Rey Mysterio going up top and hitting, what else? A frog splash. By my count, number 6 on the night. And they stack up on top of Lesnar, and Lesnar kicks out. He powers out. And I believe that was it for the night. I don't think there were any in the main event as far as frog splashes. So by my count, that is 6, including 2 in one match. Actually, I'm sorry, I take that back. Both the men's Survivor Series elimination match and this match had multiple frog splashes in the same match. So I don't know if the frog splash is like the new dive out of the ring. It might be. It was for tonight. I thought Dominic's was actually a lot better than Ray's. So now Dominic is going to climb back up to the top rope again. I don't know what he's going for. I don't know if he's going to try for a moonsault or what exactly he's thinking here. Brock pulls him off, hits a nasty German suplex. He folds this kid up like an accordion. Ray is on the top rope in the other corner. Brock turns around. Off the top comes Ray. Lesnar catches him on his shoulders and hits the F5. And you know how this ends. 1, 2, 3. And Brock Lesnar retains the WWE Championship. This is exactly what it needed to be. I thought this was fun. Especially the comeback with Ray and Dominic. Dominic looked great. He hit all of his spots. I thought this was a lot of fun. And then we got to the main event. Becky Lynch representing Monday Night Raw against Bayley, representing SmackDown against Shayna Baszler. The NXT Women's Champion triple threat match here. Shayna Baszler headlining her first WWE pay-per-view, her first Survivor Series. And it's too bad because I thought the match was boring as hell. I did not like this match at all. And I don't want to knock the work of the women in the match because they were, I didn't notice any botches. It wasn't like they were spending a lot of time in rest holds or anything like that. They were working the match that they had planned. And I don't know if it was just a combination of the match. The match was boring. You can't just put this all on the crowd. Oh, the crowd was tired. I did think the crowd maybe was tired coming off what they had just cheered for with Ray and Dominic and then the men's Survivor Series match. This was very odd placement. I was shocked that we did not see Ronda Rousey. Shayna Baszler was my pick to win. But part of that prediction was that Ronda Rousey would appear and would provide the assist for her friend to win, and it would begin build to maybe a singles match between Becky and Ronda, who I do think is going to come back at WrestleMania. So we didn't see Ronda. But I thought for sure this match being in the main event slot, well, surely there's some kind of big angle they have planned at the end. And there was none. It was just a match. Clean finish. It's always nice. But I thought the positioning of this match, after what we had just seen and how up the crowd was, this was a big mistake. This was a big swing and a miss by whoever put this match order together. But, you know, it may just be a case where they look at Becky Lynch and they say, Becky Lynch is, I don't know if top draw is the right word. I don't know that there's any evidence of that. I don't think anybody, frankly, on either of these brands is really much of a draw. Maybe Roman Reigns by default, I don't know. But maybe they just say, look, you know, Becky is our top star. And so we're going to put her where she belongs in the main event. Well, it didn't work out tonight because the crowd just seemed bored. They were chanting CM Punk. They were chanting all kinds of other things. I was bored too. I just couldn't wait for this to end. There was one point where Becky got her in the disarm her. Bailey broke it up. She hurt her knee in the process. So Becky was, or Bailey rather, was selling the knee. Action spilled to the outside. And Becky's sent into the guardrail, into the announce table. People don't care. Bailey sends Shayna inside, and she gets caught in the Karafuda clutch. So Bailey turns that, she counters that into a pin for a two count. She goes up top for the elbow drop. As she comes off for the elbow, Shayna catches her again in the clutch, and Bailey taps out. And just like that, Shayna Baszler wins for NXT. She wins the triple threat. She's celebrating on the announce desk outside the ring when the match was over. Becky Lynch gets up like a sore loser, and she sweeps out Baszler's leg. She trips her, and she's beating the hell out of her, and she's, you know, lays her out on the announce table, and she jumps off the barricade with a, it was either a leg drop or a butt drop, whatever it was, puts Shayna through the table. They should have booed Becky Lynch. Complete garbage here, what she did. What a sore loser. So, Becky is standing tall and her music is playing everything at the end, but Shayna Baszler is the one who gets the win. NXT wins the night. NXT wins the night. They decided to put NXT over strong, I assume because they realize, hey, we have this new show on USA on Wednesdays, and we want more people to watch. So if there's one beneficiary of all this build these last 4 weeks to Survivor Series and the pay-per-view tonight, it would be NXT. I don't know who else benefited from this other than NXT. And if you take NXT out of the equation, I said this on the Sound Off earlier today, think of the build for this pay-per-view without any of the NXT people. Shayna Baszler and that great segment, the face-to-face that she had a few weeks ago on Raw with Becky, what, you know, probably the best thing on the whole show that night. Rhea Ripley, who had a huge breakout week. This last week or two, I mean, has been unbelievable for this woman's career. Keith Lee, Ciampa, Fish and O'Reilly, Adam Cole. Take all of them out of the equation. What are you left with? You're left with Raw and SmackDown doing little mini invasions every single week. The buildup and the show would have been so much worse without NXT being on this show. To the point where this has to be an annual thing now going forward. You can't not include NXT. But I thought it was smart for them to really put that brand over strong. You want to get people to watch, you want to get people to take them seriously, they got to win. They can't go in there and be losers. They can't be like SmackDown, it was a last year or 2 years ago where they got swept. Shane McMahon's brand, his team, he got swept. You can't do that with NXT. And tonight they put them over strong, so that was cool to see. Let's check the Twitter poll results, see what you guys thought. Because I thought this was an easy thumbs up show, despite the boring main event. Let's take a look at what you guys think. Here are the results so far, and that's pretty overwhelming, I would say. 76% thumbs up, 24% thumbs down, with over 2,200 votes in so far. So that is easily a pretty overwhelming positive response to the pay-per-view. I would agree with that. I think TakeOver still blew it away in terms of quality. But we got two quality shows out of WWE this weekend. I only wish they could deliver that on the weekly television. It's going to be interesting to see what happens now that this is over. No more mixing of the brands. Everybody goes back to their sandboxes. Recess is over. Everybody has to go back to their own classroom. So now we're going to see what they do on Monday Night Raw tomorrow night. We're going to see what they do on NXT on Wednesday. And we're going to see what they do on SmackDown on Friday. As we head into what is typically a very slow, dull holiday period, as they kind of bide their time until the build to the Royal Rumble in January. We could be headed into a very boring period, but fear not. Fear not, because you know what's coming up. We didn't see them on the pay-per-view tonight. You'll notice they kept them off the show. You know why? Because they're saving them. They're saving Rusev and Bobby Lashley for TLC next month, and the continuation of the, I can't even call it a love triangle, I don't know what you would call it, I call it shit, that's what I call it, between Rusev, Lana, and Bob Lashley. So we have that great singles match. Maybe they'll put Lana on a pole. That could be my new donation for the Super Chats here. $20 or more. Lana on a pole. Actually, I think there's probably a lot of people in the chat who would love to see Lana on a pole, but that's for a different stream. Half an hour, it'll be midnight. We can have that kind of stream. Let's take a few calls. Not too many, but we'll take a few here. You see the phone number there on your screen. And Walter Kobielak, thank you for the $1.99 Super Chat, my friend. I appreciate that. Kevin Velasquez, I missed him earlier. Thank you. He says, it was not a Joker mask that Ray was wearing, but Psycho Clown. You might be right. It actually might have been Psycho Clown. I doubt Vince McMahon would have known even who Psycho Clown is. But the key word there is clown. So I can call him Doink and not be wrong. I call him Doink. And Dominic is Dink. I like that better. I like that better. Let's go to Chandler, Arizona. Area code 520, you're on the air.
Hey, Soul Monster, how you doing?
I'm doing well, how are you?
I'm doing good. This is, I actually, even though it's a Chandler area code, I'm actually from Maricopa, Arizona, which is the weird thing.
You're in Arizona, and it's a lot warmer where you are than it is by me here in New York.
Oh, hell yeah. Although, now we're getting to that time of year where it rains at 9 o'clock in the morning, and it pisses off my, it just pisses me off.
What's your question?
Anyway, I actually really like the show tonight, Soul Monster. Like you, I definitely had a couple issues with the main event. I actually was dozing halfway through the match.
Yeah, it's a shame, too, because I was really, this is one of the matches I was looking forward to. I've been waiting to see Becky and Shayna. I don't really care about Bayley being in the match, but I've been waiting for Becky and Shayna. And you know what it reminded me of? And I was in the building for this, so I can attest to being there live for it. I had the vibe watching this of the main event of WrestleMania this year, which was also a triple threat. And it was Becky and Charlotte and Ronda. And it was built up as the biggest match on the card. And when the match finally came, you know, 9 hours later, everybody was just bored to shit. And the match had no heat, and the finish came out of nowhere. Tonight reminded me of the WrestleMania main event, and not in a good way.
Yeah, I could definitely see that. Quick thoughts. I guess this will be my last question. About the men's Survivor Series match, I actually really enjoyed that match like you. But like a lot of people, I did have a problem with what they did with Walter. You already went over that. The other person I thought they was underutilized during the match was Damian Priest. I actually watched some of his work in Ring of Honor before he came to NXT. The guy is really friggin' good. And maybe I missed something, but he didn't do all that much in the match.
Yeah, he had a better showing at TakeOver the night before. This is just one of those things. It's like Walter. You know, why was Walter dropped 2 minutes into the match? Because they just wanted to keep things going, right? They figured not many people might know who Walter is. And then, of course, the guy comes out. He gets cheered more than anybody else in the match. Well, at that point, they have the match planned out. They're not going to call an audible and say, oh, you know, let's get rid of Drew McIntyre and keep Walter in for another 20 minutes. So the die was already cast. There was really nothing they could do. But, you know, it just he's not the one that they're pushing. He's still relatively new. He's still somewhat green. He's got way more time to spend and make a name in NXT. So he got a few moves. He got some offense in, and he got dumped. I wasn't really surprised by that, and I don't think he gets hurt by it. It's fine. Let's go to area code 862. You're on the air.
Hey, I'm Hampton from Montclair, New Jersey. How you doing, Tom?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Good. So, yeah, the pay-per-view, Survivor Series, that was really, really good. I was actually kind of surprised they let NXT win, honestly. I was very much expecting them to, I was expecting them not to, like, get buried, but I was expecting them to at least get, like, maybe two wins. I was expecting SmackDown to win this. But at the end of the day, yo, I really, I actually liked the main event. I didn't hate the main event, I wasn't particularly bored, but I kind of understand what you were saying with that. But, you know, Adam Cole, that dude is a freaking warrior, dude. Like, that guy, the shit he was been through the past month, and going through a freaking table and an air raid crash, man.
Yeah, he's Adam awesome. Cole, but keep in mind this also. I forgot to mention this earlier, and I think it's important for me to mention this. And you bring up a great point, so I'm glad you did. Adam Cole, I don't know if he still does or if he's over it now, but as of a few weeks ago, he still had a fractured wrist, and that is not a worked injury. That was a real injury. I don't know if it's the left hand or the right hand. So not only is he called into action for these impromptu matches and this whole NXT invasion, just the whole thing was last minute. It kind of felt that way. And he's wrestling Daniel Bryan and Seth Rollins and having all these great matches. And he's doing it with, quite possibly still, a fractured wrist. He's doing it with an injury, which is even crazier. Probably shouldn't have even been wrestling with it in the first place. I had completely forgotten about that. You know, if his wrist was fractured 3 or 4 weeks ago, I have to assume it's still not 100%. So that makes it even crazier. Let's go to area code 716. You're on the air.
Hey, Solid Monster. This is Dan from Niagara Falls, New York. And let me just say the first of many thanks for 12 years of kick-ass content. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, Dan.
I thought this was probably the best main roster pay-per-view, which I know isn't saying much nowadays. But, it was fun. I really liked what they did with Keith Lee as far as keeping him real strong in there, especially, like, with the night he had at War Games. So I would say, as far as like breakout stars, I was going to say Walter, but we all know what happened there and stuff. Like, would you say like breakout star of the year would be like Rhea Ripley or like maybe Adam Cole, even though he's been on the roster for a couple of years? Just wanted to get your thoughts on that.
Yeah. I mean, just based on what's happened in the last 7 days or maybe 2 weeks, I would say Rhea Ripley. You know, they brought her over from NXT UK. She just kind of came back out of nowhere, and she was super over. She confronted Shayna Baszler ever since then, and that wasn't that long ago. I mean, this has all happened since NXT came to USA end of September. This was before even AEW debuted. So it hasn't been that long. You know, what is that, 2 months? And in just the last week or two, she has had a tremendous, you know, just breakout month for herself. Keith Lee, you could put him on the list as well. I would say those are probably the two names that stand out to me. Like you said, Adam Cole, he's been around for a while. I don't know that breakout is the right word. I think he's just finally showing people how good he really is. And some people are going to say, oh, he's too small, he's this and that. You're never going to convince those people. Those people, they see one thing, they have tunnel vision, they don't care about anything else. If he's not tall and he's not jacked, they don't give a shit. It's completely pointless to even argue with those people. If you look at him based on, you know, the work that he puts out and, you know, his speaking ability and all of that, he's top notch. You know, he's one of the best they have on that NXT brand. And I think eventually when he gets called up, he'll be one of the best they have on the main roster too. There's a reason that Kevin Owens is such a big advocate for him. They've been friends for a long time. Let's go to, I think it's Providence, area code 401.
Yeah, what's going on? Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
My mic is a little iffy, so.
I can
All
hear
right,
you.
Fantastic. But I have some problems with this microphone. Anyway, yeah, I can only take so much WWE, so I only watched the Lesnar-Mysterio match and the Fiend and Bryan match in this show. You know, with so much wrestling, like, there's only so much WWE can fit into my life. And I just have a quick little, I just wanted to know, how long do you think it's going to be before Vince McMahon... finally puts a ban on this whole 365 Halloween thing that all these wrestlers have going on? Like, Rey Mysterio coming into this match, like, Brock Lesnar assaulted this dude's family, assaulted his son, the godfather of his child and everything, and then he walks down the ramp dressed up for Halloween. Like, I thought this was a serious thing to you. He's like, he's dressing up, and it was the Joker, by the way, because he's got the red jacket and the red pants. It wasn't Psycho Clown.
Okay.
It was very obviously Joaquin
Phoenix.
Yeah,
that's what I thought.
Yeah. I just think that's a little weird, you know?
Yeah, you know what? That's actually, I'll tell you this. I think that that is, and thank you for the call. I think that's a great point that I hadn't really thought about too much. One of the things that was so great about the build to this match was the fact that it was a personal rivalry. He attacked the guy's son. He beat Rey up, but he beat up his son. We were going to see a side of Rey Mysterio that we've never seen before. He's got weapons. He's got a pipe. He's showing up to TV dressed in jeans. So for a match like this, no holds barred, you know, you've beaten up my family, I'm coming to kill you, that kind of thing. And he comes out basically cosplaying as a comic book character. Whereas he should have just come out in a regular... If there was ever an occasion where he was going to come out in the most basic looking attire, the most basic looking mask, like literally a plain mask and street clothes, this would have been it. This would have been the match. It's like you see those old school boot camp matches where they come out in jeans and boots and stuff. I don't think he needs, you know, jeans and boots necessarily, but this probably was the match for that. That's a great point. I mean, I didn't see it as being that big of a deal, but yeah, you're right. You're right. In a match like this, you should go less for the whole performance aspect and just focus on the fact that you're fighting for the championship and you want to beat the shit out of this guy because he almost murdered your kid. It's like, you almost murdered my son, but let me go to the store and let me see what I can dress up as here for Survivor Series. So, yes, I had not noticed that. Let's go to 717. You're on the air.
Hey, how you doing today, man?
I'm good.
What a great commentary so far. I got two things. Did you notice? Two things during the show. Did you notice that Carmella took Flair's her flipping move? I think she got a bells rung right there because she had to be helped out the ring.
Oh, the natural selection.
Yeah, I was like, ouch! I was like, wow! I didn't realize she got hurt pretty bad. I felt bad for her and Dana Brooke because they were like the weakest links in that match. I don't know if you feel the same way.
Yeah, and I said this when they were added to the team a few weeks ago because I was shocked that we didn't get Mandy and Sonya, who we've seen get more television time than those two. And I'm like, well, why the hell are they putting Carmella and Dana Brooke in this match at Survivor Series? And then I thought about it and I said, well, they don't want to flood the match with heels. They already had Sasha as the captain. They had Lacey Evans. You know, if you put Mandy and Sonya, the only babyface you've got is Nikki Cross. So that had to be the only reason why. There's no other explanation for why you would get Dana Brooke on the show, but not Sonya Deville. It just wouldn't otherwise make any sense, except that they're heels and they wanted babyfaces. Let's go take a couple more. We'll go down to the Lone Star State, and we will go here to area code 832. Whoa.
Yeah, I just have one question.
832, are you there?
Yeah.
No, oh, oops, sorry. Well, you know, hey, shit happens. Try calling back. Let's go to area code 206. You're on the air.
Hey, Solid Monster, can you hear me?
I can hear you. Who am I talking to?
Awesome. My name is Alex.
Hey,
I'm a longtime fan. Been watching for a couple years here. I got a question. What is it with Becky Lynch in being an underwhelming triple threat main event?
As far as just main eventing as triple threats or having bad matches in triple threats? We're just having
more
them in
underwhelming.
General.
I wouldn't call them bad matches.
Well,
not like Goldberg.
Well, I would. I'm calling it a bad match. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, you know, obviously it was a triple threat tonight because of the whole brand thing. So they had to have one Raw, one SmackDown, and one NXT. I mean, there was really no getting around it. Even the tag team match on the kickoff show, that was a three-way as well. And so, yeah, in WrestleMania, they just had to get Charlotte in there. You knew they weren't going to get through that WrestleMania main event without Charlotte Flair. First ever women's match in the main event of WrestleMania. They had to get her in there somehow. Otherwise, it would have been Becky and Ronda one-on-one. I don't know what other triple threat matches you would be thinking of. The only other one I could think of is the one where Becky turned heel, even though it ended up turning her babyface, at SummerSlam last year. That was a triple threat, right? Becky, Carmella, and Charlotte. Yet again, Charlotte worming her way into a match that she had no business being in. But it worked out well for Becky in the end. Let's go to 424. You're on the air. 424, yeah, going once. Yes, yes, 424.
Yeah. Hello?
Hello.
Yeah, can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Oh, hey, man. So, you know, I've been watching your show and stuff for a while now, man. Oh, my name is Jeffrey, by the way.
Hey, Jeffrey.
So, to be honest, the whole NXT thing with Raw and SmackDown, I know they did it to compete with AEW, but do you think that's in your opinion, do you think it's really going to help their ratings on Wednesdays against AEW?
No, I mean, now it's over. So it helped them this past Wednesday. They won for the first time because they had Rollins and Becky and all these main roster people. But if Triple H is to be believed, starting this week, there's going to be no more mixing of the brands. So I don't see how it's going to... How it would help them going forward is by putting them over so strongly tonight and giving NXT overall the win over Raw and SmackDown. If all of a sudden all of these people think, wow, you know, I didn't know NXT, wow, this is the real deal, I better start watching this show, and you have a few hundred thousand people more tuning into the show. I guess that's probably the hope, but they're not going to have all these main roster guys on the show every week, so I don't really know how that's going to help them out too much.
Yes, like real quick also, like in my opinion, this is my opinion, but I don't think they should have brought NXT to Survivor Series, but then again, I mean, you know, it's just my opinion.
Well, I mean, look, if they're going to do the brand, look, I would be fine if they didn't do this brand supremacy shit to begin with, but if you're going to do it, you have to have NXT, yeah. Because why wouldn't you? NXT now is, they're on USA, just like Raw's on USA, so how do you not include NXT? And again, I said this before. Imagine this pay-per-view tonight, Raw versus SmackDown, with no NXT. I don't want to say it would have been shit, but it would have been a lot weaker than it was.
I get what you're saying.
All right, great. Well, thank you for the call. I appreciate it. I always like it when people get what I'm saying. So I know I'm communicating my point in a clear way, and I'm making sense. Make more sense than WWE does most of the time. Let's go to area code 920. You're on the air.
Hey, what's up, brother? How you doing, man?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Hey, man, I've been listening to you for years, and my, you know, like, I didn't watch the show tonight because I don't pay $10. Can I swear?
Sure.
For this fucking shit, because it's one of the, you know, the product sucks. So my question, I have two questions for you, sir. One is, did CM Punk show up tonight in Chicago?
He did not.
Okay. Number two, if you had to bring the NWO back in this era, which would never come back, but if it did, and it can't be Hogan, Hall, and Nash, but like, who would be your three members and how would you do it to bring the NWO back? I've always wanted to ask you that because you're like me. I'm probably about the same age as you. We've been wrestling buffs for our whole lives. That's all I want to know. How do you bring it back? Thank you.
Sure. Well, I mean, I wouldn't because it's just a played out concept. So if we pretend that it never happened before and it's all fresh and new, as far as how you do it, you know, it's tough. You've got all these other wrestling companies now that people are more aware of, AEW and stuff. The only way to make something like that work is to make people believe that you really have this invading force coming in. So that NXT people coming in doesn't really work because everybody knows they all work for the same company. All their checks are signed by the same person. So you would have to bring in people from the outside. So for example, if you can convince people from AEW, you know, but here's the problem with the NWO. And here's why I don't even like answering a question like this. It's not your fault, but the reason I don't like answering a question like this, the NWO worked in a time and a place. And when Eric Bischoff decided to take this idea that he had first seen in Japan and applied here in the States, he was smart. Why was he smart? He was smart because he could see that if he could convince people that he's bringing these guys in, but they really don't work for him, they work for the competition, people would buy into it. So Scott Hall and Kevin Nash coming over when they did, the timing could not have been any more perfect. Now, they got sued. I think they lost. You can't have Scott Hall coming out and doing the, you know, the curly hair and the same accent and all that. I mean, it was basically like Razor Ramon was now in WCW. But you had this wrestling war between two companies that were almost on equal footing. They were very comparable in the numbers on Monday nights. You don't have that now. Look, I like AEW as much as any other AEW fan does. And I do my live streams on Wednesdays, and I think every show has been at least good, if not very good so far. I've enjoyed the product for the most part. I enjoy watching it. I enjoy having some kind of alternative to the usual WWE stuff. I mean, there's some similarities, obviously, but I like having that alternative. AEW has an audience of about 1 million or less fans that will watch them each week. I'd say about 1 million. Figure about 1 million. The Jericho segment last week with Scorpio Sky did 1 million viewers. Okay, they have their 1 million viewers. Monday Night Raw, I don't have any explanation for it. As awful as the show has become over the years, they still get their 2 million plus every single week. It's almost like people just out of habit will put the channel on and leave it on. You know, I mean, I watch it because I have to review it on the show. As much as people love to bitch and moan about Monday Night Raw, and a lot of people don't watch it anymore, and I know some of you are in the chat and are listening to me right now, and you fall into this category, you don't even watch Raw anymore. But you do want to keep up with what's going on, and boy, do you love it when I tear it to shreds when there's something to really lace into. So I have to watch Raw every week because it's still the most popular wrestling television show that's on the air every single week, and that's where all the major angles take place. I really think it's habit. I once said habit and hope, the two H's. Somebody said, why do you keep watching? Habit and hope. I watch it out of habit, and I hope it's going to get better. And the same still applies. But you don't have that WCW right now. Maybe AEW one day can get there. They're not there yet. So you can't, it wouldn't work. It's not going to be as big of a deal. Wrestling is not as hot. It's not going to suddenly get hot the way it got hot back then. You don't have that same dynamic. It's just missing. It's not there. I wish it was. But it's just not. So you ask me, who would the new NWO be? I don't know. I can't think of anybody off the top of my head that would really move the needle. People from New Japan, I mean, are mainstream fans in this country going to give a shit? People from AEW? Chris Jericho coming back? I mean, you know, it's not realistic. So it just doesn't really make a whole lot of sense to me. Let me take one more here. And then we'll wrap things up. Well, who do I want to go with? Let's go to a different part of the country. Let's go to our friends in, we'll keep it East Coast. Let's go to Philly. Area code 267. You're on the air.
Hey, Jason. Shit, sorry, I'm nervous. I've never done this before.
Don't be.
I've been a fan of the show for a year. been a fan of the show for years. I thought tonight's show was pretty great. I really thought that NXT did one hell of a job considering with Rhea Ripley, Adam Cole did, and Shayna as well. I feel like with their losses last night, Shayna and Adam really needed to redeem themselves in these matches. So, you know, they definitely, you know, got back some of the momentum. What were your thoughts on the Nakamura, Strong, and Styles match? I thought that was a hell of a match. I was getting anxiety just watching it. Like, you had so many so many near falls. I felt like Nakamura should have won, considering, you know, he just unveiled a new championship, and I felt it would have given him more momentum. But what were your thoughts on the match, and how do you think everyone should what is your prediction for this week?
I thought the match was very good. I think my expectations were just a little too high, so I kind of came out of it expecting more. And then I looked back on it and I said, you know, I'm being a little unfair, because it was still a very good match. It was still a very good match, so I enjoyed it. It was not my favorite match of the night. I think my favorite match of the night was Adam Cole and Pete Dunne, or between that and the men's elimination match, I enjoyed them both, you know, almost equally. So it was good. It was good. I don't think it's something that's going to be remembered years from now like it could have been. But it was still very good. Shout out, by the way, to Mish, Wrestling Soup. I saw him in the chat. Always good to see Mish hanging out in there. Hopefully everybody in there is on their best behavior, because Mish, he's a giant of a man. I mean, he can do some damage. He'll pound you into the ground. Don't piss off Mish. So thank you to him for hanging out and doing some moderating tonight. So we'll wrap this up here. On the whole, again, let me just flash the poll. Let's see where we are in terms of the voting results so far. I want everybody to go, if you have not already done so, go vote on Twitter, at Solomonster. Give the show a thumbs up or a thumbs down. Right now we have over 2,500 votes. 76% thumbs up, 24% thumbs down. So pretty much where we were a few minutes ago when I showed the poll. But overwhelmingly positive, as I think it deserves. I think this was a very good pay-per-view. This was a far cry. I mean, you compared this to Hell in a Cell last month, or even the Saudi show. My God. So this was almost a breath of fresh air. And now we have TLC, last pay-per-view for WWE of the year, coming up next month. Royal Rumble in January is coming to Minute Maid Park in Houston. And when is the next AEW pay-per-view? Have they announced? I want to say February, but I don't know if they've actually announced that yet. I guess we'll have to wait and see. Thank you to everybody who can show. Willie Eichard. Thank you earlier for the $5 super chat. I almost missed it. Yeah, he and Mama Eichard were in Chicago at the show, and he agreed. He felt the main event was very disappointing. I know he was at the Takeover show last night as well. Always hits up the big Chicago show. So thank you to him for all of his support. Everybody else who has subbed or donated via super chat tonight, thank you very much. There has been a shit ton of content that I've put up recently. Obviously, episode 627 went up on all the usual podcast platforms earlier today. But beyond that, the NXT TakeOver review was pushed out separately. The predictions for the pay-per-view tonight were pushed out separately. Now this is going to be more content going up during the week. We're heading into Thanksgiving. I am thankful that all of you tune in to all the live streams, and hopefully you'll join me on Wednesday. Excuse me, my goodness. I'm going to be back here live Thanksgiving Eve. It's like old school Survivor Series. AEW Dynamite, Jericho, and Scorpio Sky for the AEW title. Kenny Omega and Pac. And I believe it's Hangman Page and MJF for the Dynamite Diamond Ring that, according to Cody, cost $42,000 to make. More than a Super Bowl ring. That's going to be contested on Dynamite this Wednesday. I'll be back here live. Hopefully you will be too. And so until then, be well, stay safe. Thank you as always for all the support. And I will see you guys back here again real soon. Oh, let me flash this real quick. Oh, how could I forget? Mayor Kane. I almost forgot. His book comes out this week. I've been plugging this for weeks. Well, guess what? I think Tuesday, this book is officially released. And you can get it for free. There's the link. Audibletrial.com/Solomonster. Sign up for the 30-day trial. Get the book for free. And one free book on the Sound Off. He's lived quite a interesting life. And I'm sure there's going to be a lot of wrestling stories in there. So there it is, Mayor Kane, My Life in Wrestling and Politics. Use our Audible link to get it for free this week. And Based Salvi, thank you for the $5 super chat. I'm out of here. I got to go to bed. Have yourselves a great night. And I'll see you back here Wednesday night. Take care, guys.